Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Foley is Pod. And of course, we couldn't do it without the Hall of Famer himself, ladies and gentlemen, the hardcore legend, Mr. Mick Foley. Mick, how are you, man?
I'll be great as soon as I get a swig of the nectar of the gods with my good friend DJ on there. Ah, delicious.
Well, we're excited that you're here. You're back. We're in studio, Huntsville, Alabama. And as I understand it, you're staying all weekend. What's going on in Huntsville?
Brother, we are making a family gathering out of it. My family, as fate had it, my family came in to town to see Shinedown, my wife's absolutely favorite band, and it's my two boys. It's up there in their top five. So we had talked a little bit earlier about a few episodes ago or a few months ago about my son Mickey meeting lead singer Brent Smith. And my wife was the person on the plane going, "Are you who I think you are?" And him like going, "Who do you think I am? Who do I think I am? Who do you think I am?" And she got her photo with him. And then Mickey, I keep saying Mickey's going to come in, right? He's such a fantastic young man. We will have him in to play his guitar and talk. But he's on the spectrum. Right. He doesn't want that to define him anymore, but he's on the spectrum. So I guess when he was looking at the lead singer, the guy could tell because he was kind of gazing more like that childlike quality that's there. Brent Smith, and as soon as Brent got his bag, he looked at my son. He gave him like the finger. He didn't give him the finger. Yes. He pointed his pointing finger out and then did the. For those of you who aren't watching, he gave him the, "Come on over here."
Yes.
And he took a photo with Mickey. So last night when I asked Mickey how it went, he said, "Brent Smith recognized me from the airport." He even said something before I said anything, and then he gave him a hug. So your guy, what's his name?
The
guy
Cassio
really did an amazing job. He was texting to me exactly where they should meet. It was amazing. And I can't thank you enough because my wife isn't just someone to say, "All right, just put it out there if you can,"
and then
leave it alone. She is thorough. She is thorough. I'll just leave it at that. She's thorough. And they all had a great time, which was incredible. But I had, if not as great a time, an interesting time due to my movie choice. Have you ever been laying in bed and Grillo just nod your head in affirmation in this case, and you're like, "I wonder, is there a good coming of age lesbian Muslim Lucha Libre movie on?"
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And there is.
What?
It's called Signature Move.
Okay.
And it's not just a coming of age lesbian Muslim Lucha Libre movie.
Might be the.
It's the Bret Hart.
Wow.
Of coming of age.
So it's good.
Yeah, I like it. Was really, you could tell it was shot on the cheap, you know, a low budget, on location in Chicago. But as I watched it, I enjoyed it. And then afterwards, I was like, wow, there's a young woman from a very conservative Muslim background. Her mom lives with her. Her mom is like a shut-in. She gets most of her enjoyment out of life by looking at the neighbors with binoculars. Mm. She is very adverse to the idea of her daughter with another woman. But the Lucha Libre serves not only to allow the young lady who's in love with the daughter of a famous luchador, mother. Yeah, it's pretty complex. And what I love about it is wrestling is treated as that vehicle with which she finds...
It connects people.
She finds herself in the wrestling. And by doing that, it allows her to embrace... I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it.
Wow.
And I know it's not for everyone. It's not even for all wrestling fans. So if I say, jokingly, "Hey, here's the premise. It's a coming-of-age, lesbian, Muslim, Lucha Libre story," and that doesn't sound like it's for you, then don't watch it because you might hate it. But if your mind is open, like, yeah, I'll spend, or I'll give it the 15, 20-minute tryout.
I'm going to check it out.
And see if I connect with the characters. And I don't want to give it away, but the Lucha leads the mother to not only a better understanding of her daughter, but also it gets her out of the house for the first time.
Wow.
When you see the mom heading for the Lucha show with the lawn chair, I really enjoyed it. It was
that's
really good.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear they enjoyed their time in Huntsville, and you found a way to entertain yourself.
You have to think the director of this movie will get...
He'll hear about this,
right? Because yes. I don't know of any other wrestler or wrestling.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, yeah. It was sweet.
You know, it's funny because you never know who's listening to these shows. And it wasn't too terribly long ago. We talked about your travels to Alaska.
That's right.
And as it happens, we got a special delivery. Mick, to your left, to my right.
Is this what it is?
This is a special delivery from our friends at the North Pole.
It's like Christmas morning. I know what it is because I asked you, is there any way it's a North Pole coffee? Oh, my God. They make it there in North Pole, Alaska.
Let's take a look at that.
I had to put that. Let me.
Shout out to those fine folks who heard it on the show, looked up our address, and there it is. Mick Foley is ready to go.
This is a North Pole coffee, North Pole blend. That's their signature blend. Oh, this is a great day.
I mean, the red paper in there, too. This is the most...
Saint Snickerdoodle, are you kidding me? Do you believe in miracles? Look at this. Saint Snickerdoodle.
What a great name for a coffee.
Saint Snickerdoodle. This is nice. And then we've got one more. Four. Truly, this is the greatest day of my life. Another North Pole blend. North Pole blend. You can never have too much of that. It is the traditional match which makes the gimmick matches stand out.
Yes, it is.
So you can't live on Saint Snickerdoodle alone.
You build up to that. That's the cage match you call it.
This is great. North Pole blend, Snickerdoodle. I am all set. And now, would it be improper to wrap all of these up individually and re-gift them?
I think that is the most Mick Foley idea of all time. I really thought you were going to say, would it be proper for us to have a cup of this on next week's program?
Oh,
and
man,
we could definitely do that.
You know what? Yeah, next week's program, this is one of the best gifts.
We do have one of those coffee makers here in the office.
Well, but the crazy thing is I'm putting things together. I didn't reach out to you. I reached out to Gilbert Boyes, my booking agent, to ask if he could get in touch with the guy who ran the Alaska Con, because I travel light.
Right, we know that.
3 weeks at a time, 19-inch carry-on, and I just buy and discard, occasionally order a six-pack of Fruit of the Loom underwear to be sent to my hotel, and I'm good to go, brother.
There you go.
And then when I'm in trouble, Conrad, us both being large men, do you have an extra shirt? And you came through big time. Oh, this is shaping up to be one of the best. This is shaping up to be the Bret Hart of Foley's Pod episode.
Well, let's say this, too. We've also got more in store this weekend, because you're spending the whole weekend in Huntsville. Tell everybody why you're here.
Well, primarily to do our show.
Sure.
But as long as I was going to be in Huntsville for the show, I was like, is there a major Comic-Con going on?
Come on.
It turns out there is, and it's at the Von Braun Center. I guess the Von Braun Center has a lot of different things going on.
Exhibit halls.
Yeah, exhibit halls.
Yeah.
So I'll be there Friday through the 21st through the 23rd. And
today, tomorrow, and Sunday.
Yes, today, tomorrow, Sunday. And I'm excited. I always, Jungle Boy is one of Gilbert's guys. Anna Jay is one of Gilbert's people.
William Shatner?
Bill Shatner's at it, you know it's a good con.
That's right.
Like, nobody steers him wrong.
No.
And I love it when there's other, it's different. When I was in Alaska, I was the only wrestler.
Right.
And you think, okay, that's good. Now I've got them all to myself. But I think we need three or four.
Yes.
Just to bring wrestling fans in.
Yes.
Because if they're on the fence, they're like, well, I like Mick Foley, but I don't know about going to a con. But if there's me and Jungle Boy and Anna Jay, I think there's one more AEW star. And it's always fun, you know. I think the fans like to know that, you know, behind the scenes, you know, almost all of us get along.
Sure.
You know, and that there's a nice little friendship there with me and Dr. Baker. So whatever you see on social media is just teasing a little bit, you know. I even gave Dr. Baker, I said, you know, Britt, I said, you ought to see if they could do, somebody was wearing a Cactus Jack wanted shirt. I said, those are Pittsburgh Steeler colors.
Wow.
Right? I said, you ought to see if they can modify that and make it a shirt for you. And she goes, would you mind? I said, no, like I've been making money off that and been happy to see people wearing it for literally 28 years now.
Wow.
28 years.
Yeah.
So like when the Briscoes had their wanted shirt, that's
cool.
That's cool by me. I'm doing fine. I'd much rather the Briscoes have their own wanted shirt than to have a bootleg wanted shirt out there.
Yes.
But I see it as a tribute. You know, I see it as a good thing.
Yeah.
Nobody copies or borrows from something that
that's
doesn't
not
work.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm all for Dr. Baker rocking a cactus-esque t-shirt. Make it happen, TK.
I know
you can make it happen.
I'm sure Ryan Barkin and the crew are on.
Ryan, yeah, get on
it. Come on. Of course, this weekend is going to be fun in Huntsville. If you have a chance, swing by the VBC and check out Mick Foley. And then next weekend, man, it's finally here, as I understand it. Next Sunday, it's a big day for you. Tell us about it.
It is the debut of WWE Most Wanted Treasures, the show that we had to only speculate on. But now that it's out there and they're doing the teasers with me and Booker and Lita and some of the other WWE stars, I can tell you we just did our final filming last week. I started working on this thing in June, and I have not flown this much. And I do travel quite a bit, except for the pandemic year where I only had a couple flights. But this is the most I've traveled since 2001.
Wow.
Traveling around the country, retrieving these items. Negotiations are big. You're in the collector world. And people have an attachment to these things. Some people, I can make money off this. Some people are in it for, you know, the transactions. Other people just love it. They love it. And so we do our very best. We never force anybody.
Right.
And one of the things I like about the show is that nothing is guaranteed. So there was literally, I won't tell you which guest I was with because I don't want to tip my hat as to which episode it is, but we were getting no. And me and the other WWE superstar were about two steps from the bottom of the stairs and then across the foyer and out of the house when we heard, wait a minute. And we turned around, and in the 3 seconds that it for maybe longer, with me going down the stairs, holding on to the railing for dear life. We've both been there. We've both been there. You're holding on to that thing as if it's the most important thing in your life. We turned around, and in those seconds, the wife had convinced the husband to let it go.
Wow.
And so not only were they financially compensated in a very fair way, I will say that, in a very fair way, but it makes for good TV. And everyone involved in this thing feels really good about it. We've got people, a crew that was just unbelievable. We all got along. Everything was harmonious. And we feel like that's going to be on the screen.
Right.
So the one rough cut I saw, the DX episode, it's really good. And if the others are up to that standard, we feel like it's going to be a very good show that has a chance to reach out to the non-wrestling fans or even the dormant wrestling fans, because in a lot of cases we're retrieving things, you know, that are
from the old days,
20, 30 years old sometimes, you know, going back to like Gorgeous George and that era.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool, and I feel good that I can finally speak about it. I feel like it's a show that wrestling fans did enjoy the first season.
Yes.
And they'll enjoy this one as well.
As I understand it, it's next Sunday night on A&E?
April 30th, and I don't know what they're kicking it off with, but we can certainly talk about it after. Look at this.
What a spread, all this coffee. Shout out to North Pole.
So I talked about this on the show.
Yes.
I mentioned North Pole Coffee, and a listener...
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I mean, listen, we didn't open the box until you were on campus. We wanted to make it easy to open on camera. So it just sat on my desk for weeks until you could be here to open it. And I mean, this is like Christmas morning in April for you.
It is. This is a great day. As a matter of fact, I believe I've seen the Keurig machine in
there. There's two here.
Can we dispatch somebody so that I can have an on-air cup of coffee?
I mean, I was pitching that we do it next week. But
next week. On-air cup of coffee.
Yeah.
On-air cup of coffee next week. I'm really excited. And you know what's great about this, Conrad, is that even though I do travel for 3 weeks at a time with a 19-inch carry-on bag and I have the little computer gizmo, too. But in this case, I was visiting my children in Florida and decided to make the clean sweep, got rid of, emptied out my storage unit in Florida.
Wow.
Was pretty sure I could fit the rest of it in one trip in a minivan, and so I did. And so now it looks like it's loaded up like the Beverly Hillbillies making their big move. Stuff sticking out the windows, but this is going to fit in there. I don't have to worry about carrying it on. This is tremendous.
Well, I'm excited that you're excited, and I'm really excited to talk about our topic today. We've spent a lot of time on the program talking about Dude Love and how much of a big part of your life that character was, but today we're really going to tackle him as a heel for the first time. We're officially at that 25-year point from so many of your iconic moments in 1998. We've covered so much over on YouTube. If you haven't already, check it out, foleyonyoutube.com.
That's right.
We touched on your brief run with Terry Funk as Cactus and Chainsaw coming out of WrestleMania and even the brief little tag team title run. But you wrote in your book that the plan you thought was to transition to you and Mark Merrow after WrestleMania. And you even mentioned that you would come up with a good idea for a program between the two of you. Do you remember this?
Did I go into details of what the program was?
Mark had changed his style after his knee injury and was getting over. It's a gimmick where he's trying to...
Oh, he's trying to shield Sable?
Yes. Okay, he's trying to take control of her. And this is a different presentation than the old Johnny B. Badd that you worked with, or even the wild man Mark Merrow. What do you remember about this idea with this new Mark character?
Absolutely zero.
Okay.
It has to be true if I wrote it down, because I did write earlier that an idea was presented to me. This is where when Russo said, Mick, I know it's not the best, but we just want to have something for you on Mania. And I gave him the words that no other star ever says. If it's just a matter of being on the card, I'd rather not be on it. Like, I wanted all my stuff to be good and somewhat memorable. And I did not think at that time with the because Mark was trying out a new character.
Yes.
He was in some ways like I was, in that I had the Cactus Jack thing down. He had that Johnny Be Bad thing down. It might not have been for everyone, but it was a character.
It was established.
It was established. It was getting over. Mark did so much great community work for free under the radar. And I think that's what really endeared him to the Turners. Like, they found out, they saw it on local news. And John, and I know Mark, he doesn't do it for the...
Right.
Because most of that stuff was just stuff he did on the down low. He just believed in talking to kids. And now he's one of the best presenters
in
the country in all of high school. And I think I told you, I ran into Mark at a hotel. Me and Mrs. Foley were checking in for a romantic evening alone. I saw Mark, and I asked him if he would forgive me for stuff that I said when I was a little bit envious of his contract. We hugged it out, and that's the way you do things, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the way you do things. So I think he's a fantastic guy, and that character, that aspect of the character was starting to click. The heel,
yes.
Johnny B. Badd, was starting to click, as evidenced by that really good mixed tag match they had.
Marvelous Mark Merrow.
Yes. Yeah, Marvelous Mark Merrow.
Coming out in boxing trunks,
yeah,
kind of like
yeah.
a leather hoodie mm-hmm. type
yep.
thing, and the sunglasses, and totally different presentation.
And that was really working, and him shielding Sable from the fans. Yeah, they had a nice program. I couldn't recognize it at the time because I was still a little bit envious.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask is, you know, you've been honest about that. When you came in 96 and when Steve came in 96, both of you were really kind of envious of his mm-hmm. contract that
sure.
he got. You guys came in for the standard bare minimum WWE TV contract that most wrestlers
opportunity,
got.
Opportunity.
There you go.
Not, we don't give guarantees. We give opportunities.
Yes.
So literally, I should probably try to find my original contract.
You think you still have that?
It could be worth some money, right?
Dude, that would be cool to see.
What they guarantee you is it five shows? 5 shows a year at $150 a year. So you were guaranteed $750 a year for 5 years without the freedom to
work anywhere else.
Work anywhere else.
I mean, it's crazy, but I wanted to bring that up again because now here you are a couple of years into your run. You've had some success. Mm-hmm. You've clearly enjoyed, not to be negative, more success than Mero has. Mm-hmm. Has that affected your relationship with him? Like, I know you guys, you know, were competitors, but you're by nature a friendly guy. And I mean, what was the relationship there? Did you still have a burr under your saddle about that? Were you treating him differently, do you think?
No, I did the manly thing and kept it mostly inside, except when I was complaining to people I was riding with. That's the manly thing.
That's
to
the
do.
Honest.
I never actually confronted him about. Sure. Yeah, you know, I was using those feelings in a positive way.
As motivation.
I was using them as motivation.
Yeah.
And now it's like you shouldn't resent anyone who's helping clear the way for guaranteed contracts, right?
Yeah.
But that, you know, that was, listen, it's no secret. I was very limited physically in what I could do.
Right.
I needed every bit of motivation I could find. And if I could cling to something that was negative and turn it into something positive, that's what I did. But I was always friendly with Mark. But
do you think the plan, like your idea, do you think the story would have been involving Sable? She was such a big part of the presentation.
Yeah.
Would it have been with the dude?
There was a part where I can't remember exactly when this happened, but there was specifically a time when the dude was supposed to come out and lay one on her. Now, never mind the fact that that's, you know, any, you know, well, if you go back in movies or whatever and we lambast somebody for doing something that's not proper etiquette today, we'd be here all day writing that.
So,
it was a moot point because I forgot to lay it on her. And I got to the back.
This was scripted in
during the babyface dude love thing.
Okay.
I think Mero was supposed to take umbrage.
There you go. Okay.
Serious umbrage to dude laying one on his lady. When I got to the back, I think it was Vince was like, did you forget something? And I went, and I looked at Sable and I went, oh, I was supposed to kiss. It wasn't like I was going into business for myself and saying, I'm not kissing a married woman. I'm a married, no, I just completely forgot.
Vince wouldn't have forgot. I mean, let's be honest. That's what how could you forget that?
Vince would have had a stringer on his finger, a crib sheet and notes on his hand.
Yeah. You wrote in your book that you received a surprise phone call from Vince McMahon that changed your outlook on the business. How far in advance of WrestleMania did you know that you would be working with Steve on the other side of it? Because you've talked about how you felt in that cage as they've just, I mean, your partner Terry Funk has a bruise on his back that, I mean, he should definitely not be working with. And now you've just taken a beating. And it feels like, you know, you had these big plans for WrestleMania. We're going to do the double cross ranch stuff. We're going to do the exploding death stuff. None of that really happens. And now the night after a brutal WrestleMania dumpster match, you're just getting destroyed. And fans are chanting for Austin.
Well, the reason they're chanting for Austin, they weren't chanting for him to make the save. When I went down and I was selling, but I didn't need to sell that much. You know,
they
laid a whooping on me. And it was Finkel, I believe it was Howard Finkel, who said, it may not have been live, you know, make sure you stick around. Plenty of stars, including Stone Cold, Steve Austin. And that's when the Austin chant started. So I should have been able to rationalize that while I was laying there. Well, of course they're going to chant his name. It's that Pavlovian response. But instead, I was like, ooh, this hurts, and I'm going to use this.
Yes.
I don't know when. But so I can't tell you for sure if I knew at that time when I was laying there that I was going to become Evil Dude or just that I knew sooner or later if I had the chance to work with Steve, I would use that on him.
I I love talking about this because, as I understand it, Russo brings to you, hey, here's the plan. You're going to be working with Steve, and it was Steve's idea.
Yeah.
So to hear that this isn't Vince's idea, it's not Russo's idea, this is Stone Cold, the hottest guy in the whole company right now. Maybe the
coming
whole
off that gargantuan mania,
WrestleMania main event with Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And he wants to work with you.
Yep.
Is this? I mean, this has got to be one of the highest compliments you could ever receive, no?
For sure, man. Because Steve clearly had a say. I'm assuming he had quite a say in who he worked with. Steve, he was, and I mean this in a positive way, he was protective about his push to the point, you know, where if he thought something was a bad promo, he almost thought it was intentionally bad. And I wish I could tell you for sure that Steve wanted to work with me at which character. I don't know when they came up with the Dude Love heel turn. But as long as we were talking about Sable, may I just point it out there, even though I think we have done this on a previous podcast, she's got to go into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, do you think it's just point. Brock not wanting her?
You know,
privacy reasons?
Probably maybe privacy, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's a family decision.
Right.
But she should be in there. She For was sure. a megastar. And, yeah, she was huge. She really was.
Yeah,
she was a big part of the Attitude Era. Definitely belongs in there. So I don't know for sure where the idea of turning Dude heel came from, but I think Vince Russo had a lot to do with it. And I know there was some worry of whether or not I could pull that off, because Russo told me the day, the night following the match, that same night, following that first match, we had two really good matches, the second one being more epic than the first, but the first one was really solid and a very good match, and as it should be when you're Mystery in your house.
Of course.
Really cementing my legacy there. And Vince said, you know, that he was worried, and then they realized, Vince put me over, because he said, Vince, it's Mick Foley. Like,
right.
Don't worry about the character. Mick's going to find a way to make this work, and we did.
So when you're laying in the ring there and fans are chanting, and you know they're chanting for Austin, this is not really, you know, where you hoped this would be, but this is where you are. Are you thinking at the time as you lay there, I'm going to use this as a way to embrace a heel turn?
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, I mentioned in my 20 Years of Hell tour that this was where things started getting a little complex and maybe overdone, because at that point I'd been in the company 2 years. I'd come in as Dark Mankind. I had become, off of that, I'd become Dude Love. I then had a chance to become Cactus Jack. I had a chance to do all three simultaneously at the Rumble. Then I'd come back as Evil Mankind. I mean, I come back as Mankind, Cactus Jack, then I'm Evil Dude Love, and by the time I was getting ready for the Cell match with Undertaker in June of 98, I just thought fans, we'd asked a lot out of them. That's a lot of momentum shifting, and it just felt like that character, not the character, like I was getting stale. But because I had Vince on my side, and Vince kind of turned me into corporate Dude Love, which was a nice, fun turn, we got through those two matches, and I was with Steve for the title.
Right.
We got through those two matches and did, I think, outperformed expectations. But leading into the match with The Undertaker, which I'm pretty sure we're going to cover in its own episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was a little bit concerned with whether the fans had seen too much of me in too short a time.
You mentioned once upon a time that earlier in your career, Michael Hayes gave you some advice about finding motivation.
Yeah.
Can you share us?
He said a bad guy has to believe he's right. That no matter how warped the logic, in his heart, a bad guy has to believe he's right, which is why I never liked the Oh, he turned heel because he was offered more money. You know, literally, and I don't want to pick on the guy, so I won't even mention, but there was an angle in World Class where Babyface was given kind of a fiery promo, and then Skandor Akbar walked over with a wad of cash, and the Babyface said, "Let's talk." And the next week, he was a heel. I was like, there is nothing about that that interests me. So I would peruse, like, a few of my favorite crime novelists. Like, I'm trying to think of the guy I used to love. He was a former child psychologist. And so he gave his heels some texture and some background and maybe, if not rationalization, at least an explanation of what it was. Jonathan Kellerman.
Okay.
That made them bad. And so I had taken parts of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein while I was reading Kellerman, trying to come up with characters that had rationales in their mind for being bad. And probably the best example I can give you, where I said no matter how warped the logic, is when I did a program with Mikey Whipwreck based around him leaving Doritos in my car and listening to heavy metal music.
I love it.
And it was so ridiculous, but it worked because I was very believable. You know, like it was really, and it ended up in my final ECW match, where for the first time only, I was, any wrestler I know of, was handed a Leonard Cohen album to use as a foreign object. But being such a Cohen fan, I didn't use it. I cradled it. So if you look out there, there is a photo of Cactus Jack cradling a Leonard Cohen album. It's
amazing. So take me through that night, you know, the night after WrestleMania. We're going to talk about the TV taping you do the next day, but that's where you cut this in-ring promo where you really try something and you're going to try to be cerebral and peel back the curtain and just talk about your real feelings, using how you feel here as motivation. But for that to happen on a 24-hour turnaround, the next day at a taping, do you just lay that idea on them as soon as you walk through the curtain, or what do you recall?
It sounds like something I would.
Yeah.
Or if they already had the heel turn in place. It would not have been a situation where I would have come back saying, hey, listen to that, I can turn heel tomorrow based on that.
Well, clearly they knew that they wanted, Steve said he wanted to work with you. And now you're thinking, all right, well, I can't be a baby face. I need to be a heel for him. How do I do that?
What's my motivation? So as soon as I think I was wondering what the motivation would be. And as soon as I heard the fans chanting Steve's name, I was like, that's my motivation right there.
You're telling that story the next day in your promo, and
this is one where I do not remember the promo.
Here's what you wrote. Well, let me get to the end. And it's funny because when I came here 2 years ago, it was Mankind, and there were always people saying, why don't you just be Cactus Jack? Then I came out in tie-dye and some boots, and they said, why don't you just be Cactus Jack? Well, I gave you Cactus Jack. I gave you every goddamn bit of energy I had. And when I was lying there helpless, you chanted someone else's name. This is not a knock on Stone Cold Steve Austin. Hey, I'm happy he's the champion. And he may not admit it, but we've known each other for a long time, and he's been my friend. But what you did to me and Terry Funk, laying there in the middle of the ring, was not only distasteful and disrespectful, it was disgusting. Well, I can finally say for the first time, after 13 years of blood, sweat, and tears, that it's not worth it anymore. It's going to be a long time before you see Cactus Jack in this ring again.
Yeah, that's better than I remember. You've seen, I remember some promos almost word for word. So you tend to remember the really good ones and the ones that slipped away on you. And you don't remember everything in the middle. That's a good one.
This one feels real.
Felt real, because that's exactly what I was thinking. And now the key word is it's going to be a long time before you see Cactus Jack.
Yes.
And so if any of those fans had their spidey senses out there, they might be like, ooh, might we see another character?
When you come out of the ring, I mean, that promo would be written about in the dirt sheets, and a lot of people, you know, because the fans in this era are really rowdy. They're lively. They're bringing signs. They're doing chants. I mean, this was before what? But they're ready for the next car crash. Sure. And you're doing something that's very cerebral. Do you remember feeling like it landed or coming back and thinking, I liked the content, but I don't know that they got it? Or did you think they got
it? I think they got it. Okay. I think they got it. There had been times when I expressed frustration that because I wasn't, it wasn't necessarily just the catchphrases, it was the cadence of getting a reaction every 5 to 10 seconds. And if you threw off that cadence, people got out of the habit of listening. You know, they were really...
They want to be Pavlovian. Yeah. They want to interact.
And it was almost hardwired into their brains that segments are going to be shorter now. We're going to hit you with a lot of different things. You don't have to pay attention for very long to anything. So when we then asked people to pay attention, sometimes it didn't happen. But my recollection is that they did listen this time around.
So what's interesting is this is a taped show, so it hasn't aired on TV yet. So you're going to go and work for the next week, including the European tour, as Cactus Jack.
Okay.
And it'll be, I guess, Cactus Jack's European-only pay-per-view debut, Mayhem in Manchester. It's going to be you and Goldust. He's got Luna with him. Do you remember that show?
No.
Okay. I love that.
Who are we wrestling?
Well, it's you guys against each other.
Oh, me and Goldust against each other.
Cactus Jack and... Sable is going to come down after the bout and attack Luna. Mark Mero is going to appear holding her back. And then as after they leave ringside, Goldust and Luna leave, Sable's going to shove Mero to the mat. And so your match is kind of a backdrop
for
that.
Yeah, okay.
The rest of the European tour, though, sees Kane and Goldust defeat you in Obenhausen and Berlin before you team up with Ken Shamrock to defeat The Rock and D'Lo in Beirut, and then you end in Hamburg with Goldust defeating you as the promo airs on Raw. Is there any one European tour, besides the one with your ear, that sticks out more than the others?
Oh, let me see. Now, business got so big in the United States that we stopped touring Europe because we were selling, you know. You could ask Ricky and Robert. They were there.
Hanging out.
Hanging from the rafters.
Yes,
brother,
sir.
You never seen so many people. Let me inhale and take two steps back. That's the classic Ricky.
It is crazy to think about how the business changed so much. We're going to talk about that here in a minute because when you first come to the WWF, it's okay.
Yeah.
But, boy, it started to get a little hotter in 97. And by 98, we're selling out everywhere we go now. I mean, it's just crazy to see how fast that can turn. Momentum is real, but sometimes you make these plans before you know you have that momentum. So this European tour, which for a long time, while business was, well, frankly, on its ass here domestically, you could always count on a sellout abroad because they weren't overexposed. They didn't see you all the time. But now it doesn't make sense, to your point. Why would we go all the way over there to sell out when we can sell out here?
Right, yeah. I mean, we did tours in the Middle East in 96 and 97. I think there were three of them. And then we never went anywhere near the Middle East the rest of the time that I was there. And our European trips became literally flybys where we did a pay-per-view show and left.
Yeah.
We would get in the day of the show, not even the day before the show. You get in the day of the show. They always had great catering at the UK events. You would do your pay-per-view, and then you'd be on a plane out of there.
To catch
Monday Night Raw. So a lot of times you scarcely remembered what you did in the match. And I'll go out on a limb and say, it may have resulted in less quality.
No doubt.
Than, you know, I don't know. There obviously were exceptions, but there were some really good matches on there. And I think it was in the UK when a dude wrestled Triple H. I could be wrong on this. And I loaded up the Sweet Chin Music, and Triple H jumped over the kick and then rolled out of the ring as if he had just gained another lease on life.
Which I love it.
I thought was a tremendous.
Hey, since we're talking about the UK, since you and I have sat down and recorded again in person, AEW's announced they're running Wembley.
Wembley, the stadium,
not the arena,
whoa,
but the stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing can be set up for tens of thousands of fans. Certainly going to be the biggest AEW show in history. This is a legendary moment in wrestling history when you go back to SummerSlam 92. As you know, anytime you go over there, fans just love talking about that. For a lot of folks, that's sort of their WrestleMania 3. And now it's going to come back, this time with AEW. What do you expect?
Well, first of all, I expect a great show.
Yes.
hey, look, they beat WWE to the punch. I think the UK has been wanting to host another big WWE event, pay-per-view.
Well, they did the whole Castle Clash.
Or I'm sorry. My bad.
But still, this feels, for lack of a better word, it feels a little bigger.
I just feel like I disrespected Drew McIntyre right there. And I'm sorry about that, Drew. What we interesting is to see what they bring in, they draw, and to see how many people jump all over them if they don't draw 40,000 people.
Well, that's the thing that's interesting to me is it's like, you know, with WWE, I think we all kind of expected for Drew and the crew to sell that out last year, whereas with AEW, it is kind of a question mark, like, what can they do? How are they going to do? And as you and I are recording it, as I understand it, there's been over 50,000 reservations for tickets. And it's unlikely that those folks are signing up to buy one ticket. They're probably going to buy two or more. So you think, hey, man, they might be able to squeeze 60, 70, who knows?
Man, it could be epic. I'm sure they've got their people over there doing promotional work.
Yeah.
And keep in mind that the Parade of Champions at Texas Stadium, where Ric Flair dropped the title to Kerry Von Erich, was in front of about 45,000 people, and that was an overwhelming success.
Yes,
no one in that day and age looked at a stadium with big swaths of empty seats and said, "Oh, they can't draw."
No.
And also, I remember back to when Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson at the Tokyo Dome. It was about half sold.
Yes.
There wasn't a lot of interest because it wasn't thought it was going to be a good fight.
Right.
So things are not instant sellouts no matter how big they seem to be. I think they could have 50, 60,000 people.
Some of the greatest matches in wrestling history, like Flair and Steamboat at the Superdome, man, they had hundreds. You know, they had
about 1,000, right? Yeah, and huge. How is that possible? Why weren't they just air dropping tickets?
You know, as the story goes, it was a fumble in promotion. They wanted to focus on the television, so they never promoted tickets.
Were they promoting the Omni next week? Right. This was before Bill Watts was the one who really made the Omni a priority. But talk about two professionals, because I got to tell you, you don't get into this business without something of an ego,
right?
And if you have 1,000 people in a 60,000-seat building, it's going to hurt.
Yes.
So for those two guys to go out there and very creatively lit, in a very creatively lit stadium.
Very dark.
And turn in just a majestic performance. It was that was the draw, right?
So that's the one where they did the submission. So it's a submission match.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. And they did it as you were laying it out, I wanted to remind you, this was head-to-head with WrestleMania.
Ooh.
So WrestleMania 5 versus this, that's the reason they were perhaps pushing it more on TV. Don't spend $30 or whatever on WrestleMania. Instead, watch this. But unfortunately, not a lot of people showed up. It was still part of the greatest trilogy maybe of all time.
But to show you what a great trilogy it was, the show in New Orleans was my third favorite. And then, to me, Chi-Town Heat and Music City Showdown are almost indistinguishable, not as matches, but in how much I enjoyed them.
Yes.
So, incredible. But, yeah, this goes back to just honoring those two amazing performances in less than ideal circumstances.
We're pulling for AEW. I hope that they do really, really well. It's great for the whole business, and it's certainly going to be a landmark for their business. I mean, just the visual of running a stadium.
Now, is this where TK has guys like Big Show going all over the UK? Big Show, Mark Henry, guys who are known by the masses.
You would think that makes sense.
It makes sense, right?
For them to already have, as I understand it, it's nearly impossible to snag a hotel room and Airbnb near Wembley. Like, that went immediately.
Really?
And I think the pre-sale happens in a couple of weeks, maybe the first week of May. So we'll see how it does.
And when is the date?
It's the end of August, August 27th. And interestingly, Mr. Foley, they haven't said it's a pay-per-view, which makes me wonder, is it going to be on HBO Max? Is it going to be on television? What should we expect?
Oh, you should expect me to be setting up a card table outside of Wembley.
Selling T-shirts like Virgil. Hey, that's what we need to do. We need to get over there and do a live show right before. That's what we need. Hey, so listen, let's talk about how crazy the business is back
in the day. So say they draw 60,000 people. If only one out of every 100 stops at my table, it'd be a good payoff, right?
I mean, can we get that many Funko Pops over there? let's talk about 98 here, because we mentioned you guys go to Europe, even though, you know, at this point, maybe you don't have to, but you do a full tour, and you're going to come back. And just to remind everybody, we had the Monday after Raw. That's where you get this motivation. The very next day in Syracuse, you cut that promo about you fans have turned on me. You won't see Cactus Jack again for a long time in this ring. That airs on the 6th. So the next Monday is April 13th, 1998, and that is where you guys end the 83-week streak. And you beat Nitro for the first time.
Yeah.
But before that happens, you come back from Europe. And yes, we're going to go beat Nitro, but first, I got to go work an indie show. What in the world is going on? We're hotter than ever. You're working with the world champion. But I got to go get this indie show.
I thought I did the indie show before Over the Edge in May.
You're in Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee.
For who could forget the Great Lake Championship Wrestling event at the Eagles Club Presidential Ballroom? And old Colonel Corruption, boy, he was no match for you. You won their title, that prestigious Great Lake Championship Wrestling title. It's a world title, by God.
This has got to be Dave Hero's promotion.
I love that. You, in my head, you show up and you go, I'm working with Steve. I mean, I can't lose, so I guess I'll win the belt. What in the world is happening?
Hey, you know, you have to blame there is the company. There's no way they should have let us do that.
Never.
Never, never.
I can only guess that they booked this the prior year before you guys got really hot. I just want to remind everybody, here we are in very early April of 98. In late September, they're telling Brett, we can't honor your contract. We can't afford
right.
it. So things are not where they are now, just right. a handful of months later. So in my head, maybe they got this permission maybe in the fall or maybe late summer the prior year, and you sign up for it. You're coming back from sold-out tours, about to beat Nitro's ass, but first,
Great Lake Championship Wrestling.
Colonel Corruption better get his shit together. You're ready for it.
Was he a colonel or was he a corporal?
Corporal
Punishment.
That's a different
Colonel Corruption was a different guy.
It is a different guy.
I think
guy.
They served in the same
faction
of the military.
So listen, April 13th, 1998, what a big day it is. This is the day it finally happens.
Yeah.
It starts with Austin challenging Vince. Vince is eventually going to be talked into it. Austin said, I can beat you with one hand tied behind my back. And of course, the Stooges are trying to talk him out of it. JR tries to talk him out of it.
This was my favorite single episode of the Monday Night Wars.
Just because of the episodic thread
all the way through it.
Yes.
I think we only had 2 hours instead of three, which is like a giant albatross around a creative's neck. It's just really tough.
It is.
To do the 3-hour show. 2 hours, especially when you're doing a great job of storytelling like we did that night, it goes by almost in the blink of an eye. And I just love the fact that you have Pat. You have
Briscoe
showing him some moves. I mean, he even says to Vince that Steve always sets up the stunner with the kick to the midsection.
Yes, he does.
And if you could grab that leg, he goes, "You own him. You own him." So he's getting all his advice from which is probably worse than getting no advice at all. Getting it from everyone.
And we see Shane McMahon as a television character for the first time.
Oh, we do.
So Shane had been on TV before as like a WWE official or a referee or what have you. But this is the first time we really get to see Shane as Shane McMahon, the son of Vince. Like, he had otherwise just been a suit helping Miss Elizabeth
or
whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty monumental thing. And you're in the back as all of this is happening, and it's in Philadelphia, where so many iconic moments in your career have happened. It's a special place for you in ECW and WCW when you're working for, the other independents that were predating ECW. Was that another? I guess what I'm trying to drive at is those fans probably want to see you as Dude Love less than anybody else. Like, they love Cactus Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll tolerate Mankind. But they boo Santa Claus, and they probably hate
They didn't just boo him. They threw snowballs at him. Yes. And in ECW, they chokeslammed him. 9-1-1.
There you go.
Chokeslammed Santa Claus. I think it should be noted that what made this, I might be skipping, prior to, I became Vince's corporate guy. But I can't remember if I became Vince's corporate guy after the first match with Austin. Or
it's after.
After, okay. So this one was just Dude Love on his own promo.
Well, I think perhaps it's part of this, but I'm saying at this point, we have not yet seen the payoff for the promo you did before.
Okay.
Like, this is where it's really going to happen. And, you know, this is Philadelphia. This is going to be your time working those pay-per-view main events. At this point, you've had a few in the WWF, but business feels hotter than it did in 96 and in 97. And now you're going to be trying yourself as a heel once you've kind of been getting pops as Cactus Jack. Did this feel like a risk?
Yeah, definitely. Because it wasn't something I could fall back into. Way back several months when we were talking about the Dude Love's incarnation, the first one in WWE. I was pointing out that I was glad that I wasn't reading any newsletters because they were pretty tough on me because I was learning a brand new character as I went. And in a sense, heel Dude Love is a new character.
Yes.
Like, he doesn't bear that much resemblance to the freewheeling, fun-loving dude. He becomes kind of this snobby, better than that, you know, wearing eyeglass. Yes. Not that eyeglasses are bad. Vince's jacket because it fit me. Sweatpants, still have the sweatpants on. Can't change everything up. And I just tried to systematically change everything fans loved about me, hearkening back to my ECW experiment on trying to how to get Philadelphia ECW fans to dislike Cactus Jack. Well, I'm going to systematically take away everything they like about me, which is where with the goatee was shaved, the condescension moved in, the schmoozing with the fans. And creating what I thought was a really good heel character that worked in ECW. So in this case, I'm going to try to systematically take everything the fans love away from me. This is where I start wearing my front teeth. The top teeth for the first time in many years. I claim to be a leader of men and a lover of women. I am claimed I spoke five languages, which some people think I still do. I'm Dude Love. It was a different type of dude, and it was a risk. It was a big risk, and I even tried to bleach my hair. So I think it's the second match I do, the better of the two matches, even though they're both good, where you can kind of see the hair is a little bit off, but it didn't take. The whole bleaching thing didn't take, but that would explain why when I had my greatest success as Mankind, the hair is like a little bit blonde in places, and it's because I didn't have the wherewithal to go back and dye it back to its regular color. But I thought it made for a pretty nice look. Like when I'm holding up that title, you know, there's that iconic photo, yo, Mrs. Foley, he did it. And the hair's got those blonde streaks. That was because I was trying to bleach my hair to become the most dastardly heel that I could.
Right. So, as you're watching, you just said a moment ago that this episode of Monday Night Raw is one of your favorites.
Oh, yeah. Until I showed up.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask.
Then I ruined everything.
Because, man, it feels like they've got more and more momentum, and when it's time for the payoff, the ultimate heat, the reason to hate you is we really wanted it, and you took it from us.
I took it from you. We baited you.
Did you like that writing? Or did you feel like maybe this is... Because, listen, we've all heard... There's good heat, and then there's quote-unquote go-away heat. And for whatever reason, there are certain talents, like I never understood it, but several years ago online, there was this, oh, that guy had X-Pac heat. And I think now the internet has realized, hey, you know, if Sean Waltman was wrestling today, he might be champion.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, people would say X-Pac heat, and I never really understood that. But I do understand the genesis is good heat and go-away
right.
heat. Did you think, man, this might be the wrong kind.
I did. I'm going back now 25 years,
right.
trying to put myself in that mental space. I have to think I realized what a great show it was.
Yes.
And that I was going to ruin it.
Yes.
And that people would not take kindly to the bait and switch. I mean, it was, yeah, I think in retrospect, they should have really delivered that night. We broke the 83-week streak, but then it would be a while before we got them again, right?
Well, yeah, there's going to be some competition and some back and forth. And what I want to remind everybody is the idea here is we're trying to draw money. And you, you're in the back, you're watching the show, you know it's a good show, the crowd is hot, it's building. In this stage of your career, when you're taking a risk like this, you're in Gorilla, you're in your full Dude Love garb, you're waiting on your music to hit. You nervous?
I don't know if a music hit that day.
It did.
It did. I would be really nervous, but I think everyone who has ever had to do a run-in has been nervous about it.
Yeah.
Even if it's your Royal Rumble entry, it's pretty nerve-wracking. I think it's a positive thing. There have been times when I haven't been as nervous, but anytime there's physicality and anytime, you know, the balance of the show is waiting, something's hanging in the back. You know what I'm saying.
Yes.
It's I know we're going off the air. We have to go off the air hot. Stuff's got to look good. I did realize on a certain level that I was ruining the perfect show, but I obviously was going to try to make my part as good as it could be.
Your promo when you come out is a really good promo where you're going to ask, the dude wants to know, why can't we all just kind of get along? I got a level with you, Philadelphia. The dude does not feel a whole lot of love out here tonight. And you talk about how close you are with Steve. But then you say, the dude's got a veto you putting this beat down on. Quote, oh, we're tight, Steve-O, about as tight as two cats can be. But you got to understand, Steve-O, Vince McMahon writes the checks that let the dude live the kind of life the dude likes to live. So I guess you could say, Uncle Vinny, you are my main man. So you're down here to save him because, well, you want to protect your lifestyle.
So wait, I gave a promo. I didn't attack him first.
No, you're talking.
I'm talking, okay.
And then, of course, and I want you to remember one thing and remember it good. When you look at Stone Cold Steve Austin, you got your eyes set on the world's toughest SOB, and he can put you down on your ASS just like, and then Vince shoves you down on your ass, and it looks like... Oh,
like he's upset with me for ruining things.
Yes.
But we were in cahoots.
And when you turn around, you lock the mandible claw in on Austin. Cahoots! The show goes off the air, having never seen Vince versus Austin.
So but, I'm thinking to another episode of Raw where we went off hot and rolling around and all that stuff.
So you've got the mandible claw locked on as the show goes off the air. And the fans worldwide were jacked because they wanted to see Austin versus Vince. They didn't get to see it.
They sure did.
Instead, they see Dude Love with a mandible claw. How are you feeling that night?
I can't remember. I mean, I was aware of the fact that I'd ruined a perfect show. I didn't. I think maybe I was going to wait until the next day to see the tale the ratings told.
Well, the ratings are in. 4.6 for Monday Night Raw, 4.3 for Nitro. Meltzer would call it one of the best episodes of WWF television of all time. Meanwhile, Nitro was like a flat edition of Thunder. And you wrote this in your book. Dude was even given his own Love Shack interview segment, which featured a pink shag rug, love beads, lava lamps, and new dudettes. The dudettes seemed to be a different breed now. Gone was the innocence of old, replaced by the skimpiest of thong bikinis.
True.
Under those guidelines, my wife gracefully declined the company's invitation to resume her role from the previous summer. Were you digging this idea of having a Love Shack segment? I mean, you're a guy who grew up with the Piper era.
I was. I guess there's a reason there was only one of them. There may have been two. I think I got my hair caught on the beads when I came out. And I was unusual for that time. I was given a word-for-word promo. Really? To memorize, and I don't think I was comfortable enough as heel dude to say, hey, look, just give me some bullet points. I think I can nail this thing.
You felt like, hey, I need some help on this.
I don't know if I wanted as much help as I was given.
I got you.
But I didn't feel like I did it word for word, and I think it kind of suffered a little bit. But I was still trying to get in my head what a heel dude love would be.
The next Monday Night Raw opens with Vince McMahon fining you $5,000 for what happened at the end of the previous Raw. Not quite leaning into yet that you're the guy. But as the show goes on, that will change. You're in the main event that night against Steve Blackman, barn burner anywhere in the country.
That's the main event?
Yeah. And Vince McMahon is going to come to ringside to do commentary. And as your five-star classic is going on here with Steve Blackman, JR is going to ask Vince point blank, how dude was qualified to be the number one contender? And Vince didn't really have an answer. The idea being the fix is in. JR is also going to point out that Earl Hebner is out of the hospital and is going to be available to referee at Unforgiven. And Vince points out that he would be my ideal choice for a referee in that match. Of course, we're talking about Survivor Series 97.
Right, yeah. This is really some good stuff.
It is.
Some good stuff. Just reading about it is some really good stuff.
Did you know at this point, I mean, had you put together, you know, I know that you wanted to be the top guy. And as you're laying there in real life the night after WrestleMania 14, and they're not chanting for you, they're chanting for Steve, it does make sense to use that as motivation. And, hey, if you can't beat them, join them. I'll just be a heel. I'll be on the other side. But even there, it still feels like Vince is the number one heel.
Sure.
And you're, is that something that you are trying to process? Like, you had this Dude Love character established. Now we're going to try him as a heel and associate it with Vince. This feels challenging.
Well, the whole thing was a challenge. We did the Dude Love episode. We talked about the difficulty in having a pacifist wrestler. Now you have a man who is a pacifist as a heel.
It's weird.
There were some wrinkles to be ironed out, but I really felt good. I mean, I'm Vince's guy, you know, so I felt good. Once I saw the Austin Rocket in mid-flight, I knew I wasn't going to be that guy. Like,
So if you can't be that guy, stand across from him.
Yeah, stand across from him, do business with that guy. And I was overjoyed to be given that nod, just like I had the year before after Undertaker won the title. I had his first pay-per-view, which is what Mr. In Your House does.
Of course.
And so I was overjoyed to be given the nod. And I didn't know exactly how to do it, but what was rewarding, Conrad, was seeing the improvement on a week-to-week basis. And throwing things in there. So, you know, dude, all right, people like that Dude Love. All right, now we ponytail it. The hair, you know, has got some aspects of blonde in it. You know, I'm wearing Vince's jacket because it did. It fit me good at that time. I've got the girls. I started realizing how to add some aggression into the mix as a heel. So I think it's pretty adventurous of WWE to be taking an unknown commodity and putting him in there with the top guy in the company, but I guess it goes down to what Russo said after that first match exceeded expectations. Vince, it's Mick Foley. Like, he's going to find a way. And I guess I usually did. I think in that.
No doubt.
I think.
Do you remember the ending of that match with Steve Blackman?
It was a schmoz, right?
So Steve, you lock him in the dreaded abdominal stretch, and Vince demands they ring the bell immediately. So they're trying to just play off of Survivor Series 97, which we've covered on this program before, that you're the only guy who really protested and didn't come to work as a result of that. And now a handful of months later, it's part of the story.
Right.
What'd you think of that creative?
I was okay with it. Brett landed on, that really hurt the situation in Montreal, hurt Brett for a long time. I guess I was okay with it and had some fun with it as well. And then and a few months later, Survivor Series 98, you know.
Unbelievable story.
Yeah, we do the storyline that couldn't have been told without the Montreal Screwjob.
As Austin is watching all of this, he catches on for what McMahon's doing, and he storms the ring. As he promised earlier in the show, he shoves McMahon, throws him to the ground, and then you attack Austin. Austin hits you with a stunner. McMahon's going to bail. And JR closes the show by asking, is McMahon going to screw Dude Love out of the title this Sunday on pay-per-view? I'm sure he meant Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Even though Austin defending against Dude Love isn't creating instant images of box office hysteria, the storyline that McMahon will be at ringside has promised a catastrophic occurrence might tempt fans to order the event to see if McMahon, this time as part of the storyline, flexes his promoter's muscle, so to speak, and screws McMahon out of the title, just like he did to Bret Hart. Ironically, the same week, McMahon, for storyline purposes, admitted to screwing Bret. Simultaneously on Nitro, Bret was screwing Randy Savage out of the WCW title and helping Hogan get the pin to regain the belt. What goes around comes around. That's interesting that we're both leaning into that. Those, of course, are Wade Keller's words, but, you know, now the match is set. Fans kind of have an expectation. You're going into it, and it feels as if there's some Survivor Series shenanigans afoot. Are you pretty confident after this segment we're going to be able to pull this off? I mean, this is Austin's first big pay-per-view title
defense. Yeah, I was not 100% sure that I could pull it off. Like I just alluded to the challenges. Pacifist wrestler, yes. Leaning on his knowledge of five languages, lover of women, leader of men. I wasn't sure how that was going to play. I do believe that by the standards of the time, that in your house did a pretty good rating.
Yes.
Do you have the numbers there?
We're going to get there.
Okay.
It's a real test, though, because I just want everybody to remember, this company was really built, and their pay-per-view model was built on Hogan, a babyface champion, just slaying monsters, right. One after another, big behemoth.
And that was when there was only four.
And now we've got to do them every month. And we have a babyface champion again, whereas everybody else historically would have a heel champion and lots of babyfaces chasing.
Yeah.
We've got a babyface, and we're going to have to start finding monsters for him. And the first one is maybe
the most monstrous, interesting.
Yes, like the lovable Dude Love character. So it feels like a risk, but it is a great story. Nitro does beat Raw that night. I don't think that really matters. You're not working any house shows between that Raw and Unforgiven in Greensboro. Is that something you would have liked to have done, is work as a heel Dude Love to figure that out as far as the in-ring? Because beforehand you were doing a lot of babyface stuff.
Yeah.
Duding it up.
I was duding it up, brother. I believe there's even a t-shirt.
There is.
Duding it up. I'm duding up. I want the world to... that's another Diana Ross, forgive me, but I'm going to dude it up.
I love
to
it.
To music one of these days. I was really concerned about how things would go. I remember throwing a bunch of things at the wall and talking to Steve, seeing what might work and what might not work. And proof's in the pudding, brother. It was a good match.
Before we get to the match and all that, the pay-per-view is going down in Greensboro. That, of course, is Ric Flair country. Mm-hmm. On the other channel, there's been some real problems with Eric Bischoff and Ric Flair in real life. Rick had missed a Thunder show because he wanted to go watch Reed compete in an amateur wrestling event at a state level, or maybe it was a national level. Either way, it was something that Rick had requested the time off for. Bischoff's office said, nope, he didn't ask for the time off, and we've had enough. We need to make an example out of someone. And that someone wound up being Ric Flair. So this story goes around that perhaps Ric Flair was circling the building that night in Greensboro and on the phone with WWE folks, WWF at the time, saying, hey, I've got my son with me. Why don't I sit in the front row and you guys introduce a great wrestling champion sitting ringside?
Ric Flair.
And it's Reed. Not me, but I'm there. This is the height maybe of the Monday Night War because you guys have just won for the first time. So now there is this renewed sense of competition, even if the P&L show, you're both just crushing and selling out everywhere. When do you remember hearing the Ric Flair might be here story?
That night. Really? I did. It was that line about a great wrestling champion.
Yes.
That was the one that rang the bell for me. Just that night. So it had that little bit of a feeling like an invasion angle.
Like anything could happen.
Yeah, anything could happen. It certainly would have been fun. I think we would have welcomed that.
Yeah.
I think Dude would have played off Rick pretty well, you know? It did not happen, though, right?
It did not happen.
Okay.
And I'm curious about the thing that did happen that night, because this feels like it would have been a match that you would have been involved in, but you weren't. the first ever Inferno match in the WWE, where they're going to run gas lines around the outside of the ring. They're going to have Gerald Briscoe turning it up and turning it down. I've talked to our personal friend Kane before, and he told me he had no chance to practice that because their limo driver went to the wrong town the night before. They were supposed to walk through it, so he's seeing it for the first time day of. This is a first in WWE. Were you disappointed you weren't involved in the first fire match?
Look, I never liked the fire. You know, I did it. I never felt comfortable with it.
After the ECW incident, which we'll talk about another time, were you gun-shy from then on about working with fire? I mean, we know you had a big WrestleMania moment with fire as well. So fire.
Yeah, I know. I thought it had a time and a place, right. You know? I mean, that Kane's character,
sure,
you know, was, he rose from the, you know, there was the fire incident and the killing of the apparent, right? Who died in the fire? The Kane?
His whole family.
Whole family.
Yeah, and that's after Paul diddled Kane's mom, as you recall. Hey, so she did. I mean, he did. I mean, and here's the real question, and I know what you're thinking. We're all thinking it. Do you reckon Paul Bearer needed Blue Chew?
Can I tell you a quick Iron Mike Sharp story?
Yeah.
Iron Mike Sharp was OCD, right?
Right.
Legendarily so.
Lots of shower time.
3-hour shower, the baby oil within a plastic baggie, within another plastic bag, within about 17 baggies. He one time took a 3-hour shower, slipped, went down to one knee, and went back in the shower for another 3 hours.
His knee was dirty.
So he was a guy with some compulsive behavior. On a tour of Austria, Mike thought you could do the same gimmick with their adult-oriented programming that you could do in the United States at that time, which was watch. There was like a 5-minute window.
Oh.
And as long as you switched before the 5-minute window,
you wouldn't be charged. So you just had to be fast.
But in Austria, he was charged.
Every time.
63 times.
Oh, my gosh.
So he comes out to the bus with a bill that it unrolls like a sacred scroll. It's like, boom, 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 boom. And it's just Mike Sharp being charged $10 or $15 every 3.5 minutes. And it was oh, tremendous.
I mean, over $1,000.
Over $1,000. Yeah, probably up there.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Man, why not try Blue Chew free? Use our promo code Foley. Man. And by the way, there's websites out there. You don't have to pay anymore. Just throwing it out there. So listen, this Unforgiven 1998 show, we've got this Inferno match. What did you think of the execution of that? Like, you're a hardcore wrestler from
I can't remember.
Okay.
I honestly can't remember. I thought it did the job.
Yeah.
You know, it did the job. I think, you know...
Did you think they asked Kane too much? Hey, put this sleeve on. We're going to set it on fire. It'll be fine. Like, to me, it's like, man, that's... I can't imagine when you signed up and you went into Mr. Danucci's school the first time. He's like, son...
Today, my boy.
We're going to set you on fire, my boy. We're going to burn you up. Not for real.
Well, look, if you have to do it... trust me, when I was doing my fire incidents in Japan and ECW... There was no stunt coordinator.
None. Just figure it out.
You figure it out. I mean, they have that stuff down. And as evidenced by when Edge and I did our match at Mania, even though we were not technically on fire, about 5 guys with fire extinguishers came over just to make sure. Like, they're going to play it really safe. And I'm sure if Kane had that sleeve that it had been checked out and approved and that they had the safety mechanisms, God forbid something goes wrong, that it would be taken care of very quickly.
Have you seen the tapes from FMW where they set the ropes on fire
and
nobody could breathe and they had to bail?
Yeah, and that's when the original Sheik was really badly hurt because he couldn't get out of the ring.
Yeah,
everyone else was able to bail out under the rope, but by the time Sheik came around to it, you know, those flames, they were just overwhelming. He spent weeks in a hospital in Japan for severe burns.
Not only is it hot because it's fire, it's also, you can't breathe.
Right.
I mean, that's something worth mentioning. Like,
that's
even with Undertaker and Kane here, Kane specifically is wearing a mask, and they're big boys with long hair.
Right.
And, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I would gather, I would guess that their gear is highly flammable. I mean, my goodness.
They put the gel on it. I don't know what was done, but I'm sure those guys were taking...
It's a risky proposition.
It's a risky proposition, and you're the first people doing it.
So there's and no, there's, like...
Yeah, and there's a history. I was joking around with my daughter when I went down to visit her about the fire incidents and the lawsuit that we had against us, and that I'm listening as our side of the story may be leading people to believe that fire is very safe and that no one has ever been hurt, and I'm waiting for the prosecuting attorney to have a similar scroll of names of people who have been hurt playing with fire. And I also mentioned that as ECW became more and more popular, the guardrails moved closer and closer in to accommodate more people. So there were times when there was about 18 inches. If you go back and you watch the cactus elbow, I had to start dropping it like in different parts of the venue because you couldn't get any distance whatsoever. Right. You'd be more or less just be like this and just leaning in and falling down because we were trying to get more people in the building. So there had been danger for sure, and sure, people had been injured for sure. And that's a serious point. You know, I expect and suspect that they were well taken care of, but any fire is probably too much fire in a wrestling match.
I just find it interesting that they, even though they initially agree to your crazy WrestleMania ideas of this death match at the Double Cross Ranch, we're not going to do that. Instead, 1 month later, we're going to surround the ring with fire and let guys wrestle with a sold-out building. Like, that feels like one's way more dangerous and risky than the other, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but the other one's not Mania.
Right.
And also, the death match we proposed probably would have been extremely bloody, whereas with the fire, you know...
That, you don't have to do that.
Yeah, that aspect's not there. And it was interesting. No one had ever seen it. I don't think it resulted in a great match. It's really hard in those confines to have a great match, but it was definitely interesting.
Oh, it was. It was a spectacle. And speaking of spectacles, we saw one recently, at least online.
I thought we had a new eyeglass.
Oh, sponsor. Yeah. We'll do that next week. I wanted to get your take on Onita. He recently wrestled again against Joey Janela over in Japan.
Really?
And they used an electrified bat. And Onita takes the big swing and nails Joey, and boom, huge explosion. Of course, Joey sustained some burns to his arm. And a lot of wrestlers in this generation, and even myself, we grew up in the tape trading era. So the idea that we could see some of the stuff you did in 95 and then some of the other craziness that happened in Big Japan and FMW and all of those exploding deathmatch concepts. And we've seen in recent years that become more and more in fashion. A few years ago, they had that rather regrettable exploding death match on pay-per-view for AEW. But still, Onita doing his thing over in Japan, I'm sure the fan in Joey Janela was thrilled to have that opportunity. Sure. But I don't think a lot of fans who maybe grew up watching you on the WWF, maybe they understand it. Could you understand why a guy who grew up doing it? Because to me, that could be like Joey doing the Superfly splash off a cage, right? Like, that's what it was to
you. Sure. Yeah, that'd be a big honor. I got to be honest, I'm a little hurt that my phone didn't ring, at least putting the offer out there. I can't do much anymore. I am retired. I don't count the little altercation I had with Frank the Clown a couple years ago as a match.
Sure.
I don't count what Steve, Shawn Michaels and I did at WrestleMania 2016 as a match. So my last match, you have to go back to 2012, which is Royal Rumble. And before that, last real match was against Ric Flair in TNA.
Yeah.
So that was a good way to go out. That was a really good, hard fought, really, I think, impressive match. But, you can work around your weaknesses. And it might have given me reason to drop some of this weight that I put on post-pandemic and have kept hanging on. We need to bring Scale.
Let's do it.
Scale.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to be doing a few things. The weight loss challenge. It's up there. I had a physical. It's up there. It's unhealthy up there. So I need encouragement from my listeners to root me on to victory. I got to get under 3 bills.
So you're saying if you get under 3 bills, you'll set Joey on fire?
Yeah, sure.
I love it. That was, hey, you're welcome, Brett. From your book, you wrote, the pay-per-view match was a tremendous success, both artistically and financially. Ooh. I actually had a great deal of doubt leading up to this match, as I wasn't quite sure how to keep Dude in character, while at the same time making him seem like a threat to the Federation champion. I even dyed my hair a little to try to alter the Dude's persona. I found out later that even the office had reservations about this matchup. I mean, is it just because it's such an unconventional character and concept? I mean, the writing is good.
Yeah.
Did the office tell you what their hesitation was?
Vince, he was, Dude was by far the least impressive of the three. And like I said, the challenge is how do you take away someone's aggression or even desire to compete or inflict damage on a fellow human being and still make him a formidable bad guy. So we figured it out, though. Figured it out. I had a lot of hesitation.
There's a lack of top heels, really, at the company. Let's talk about what Wade wrote. Steve Austin came out to a huge pop. He grabbed the timekeeper and bell ringer Mark Eaton at ringside and dragged him into the ring. Then he asked him if McMahon told him to ring the bell on Raw last week. Of course, Mark was believably nervous and said he rang it when he was supposed to. And Austin told him if McMahon screws him out of the title, after he finishes up beating McMahon up and down the aisle, he's going to beat him up. So you've got a choice to make, your job or your life.
Whoa.
I like that. That sort of sets the precedent right up front. But it's interesting because they have him come out first. I guess it's because they had to do that. Then Vince comes out. Of course, he's got the Stooges with him. And McMahon starts saying something catastrophic is going to happen here tonight. That could mean anything. He tells the crowd that his mother had the pleasure of giving birth to him in Pinehurst, North Carolina. So it's kind of nice to be back home. I love that. He said it would be beneath his dignity to respond to accusations that he's going to screw Stone Cold out of the title, but he would accept no responsibility if Stone Cold screws Stone Cold, like, you know, Brett screwed Brett. And
at this point, Vince has rapidly become one of the
best orators.
Yeah, he has really nailed this Mr. McMahon character.
As soon as he says that about Stone Cold screws Stone Cold, JR on commentary says, yeah, that time-honored tradition or something like that. And then you guys get going. 18 minutes, 40 seconds. Dude Love's going to get the win by DQ because Austin is going to hit Vince McMahon with a chair. And as the match was first starting, JR said he couldn't believe a wrestling executive once said that Austin wouldn't make it wearing black tights. What a dummy, JR said, which I think is fun. Nice little shot at Bischoff. About 3 minutes and 10 seconds in, you're brawling onto the music stage, and Austin throws you off the stage, and you take a huge bump to the floor. Wade would write, devastating toss, looking, but he got up. Listen, I'm not saying this to be funny. How does one get thrown off a stage safely?
You know, this is where the common wisdom is you try to disperse as much of the blow as you can across as much of the area. But with a hip toss, you don't want to land flat on your back. So I would always cheat a little bit towards, usually the right hip took the brunt of the blow. And that was where the right hip was always taking the brunt of the blow on the elbows. And that's why I've got a metal one now and a metal knee, largely because of the decision to land on the right side of my body. It hurts. It's bone-jarring stuff that hurts deep down for several days. Yeah.
You've talked to us a lot about, what is it you always call it, the risk?
Risk-reward ratio analysis?
Yes, the Foley.
Yeah, Foley instantaneous.
Yes.
Risk-reward ratio analysis.
And you've talked about chair shots. Yeah. And, of course, the internet is hot to trot since we've learned about CTE. Don't do headshots. But you've said, I could block some of that with my hand. And, and you've showed us the magic of how that happens. Is there one thing, if you could look back and say, because I know these days a lot of veterans say, oh, you guys got to change your style up. You're never going to have longevity, blah, blah, blah. Same thing they said to you. You got to stop taking these risks, yada, yada. If there's one you had to get back, like we've heard over the years, perhaps the leg drop is the worst thing Hulk Hogan could have done.
Yeah,
because it caused all that spinal damage that he didn't know at the time.
And we wouldn't have known because you would have thought, you know, you can even have
it looks safe.
It looks safe. It doesn't look devastating.
Yes.
But for a guy that size to be dropping from a decent height, he got some height on that, with one leg slightly higher than the other.
Compressing the spine.
Compressing the spine, yeah.
So I guess what I'm going to ask is, would one of your, like, hey, guys, tell your stories, do your matches, but if you can, the concrete ain't your friend. Will that make the list or no?
What would make the list is the elbows I dropped in small towns with no television cameras. That should have been a TV-only move. And I should have, you know, and I should have thrown up the hand far more often. You know, when someone was taking the baseball swing, and I don't know if anyone else was taking baseball swings, because I did have the ability to, you know, to get that thing up in time. Not that I'm going to compare my wrestling to the running of Gale Sayers, the great Chicago Bear, but I was just watching last night. He grew up a huge Bears fan, you know, with the Butkus poster over my wall. And so when I saw something pop up on YouTube after I'd done a cameo video, it was about Butkus and Gale Sayers. 9 minutes and just unbelievable. And Sayers said he had, he worked hard, but he did have some God-given gifts. And one of them was the peripheral vision that allowed him to almost see everyone who was out there, anticipate people. And you'd see he'd make cuts that he should have no earthly idea how to make because he didn't have eyes in the back of his head. But he felt like that sense was something that was a gift that was his. In the same way, I think that eye-hand coordination and the ability to get that hand just so it wasn't like this. I mean, that thing, that stuff was quick. You know, you look at the match I had with Vader at Halloween Havoc, and that is one of the most devastating baseball swings I've ever seen. And I was able to get the hand up just in the nick of time. So that was something of a gift I had. And now I'll segue over to the Walter Payton highlights I was seeing right after that. When you ask about things that should have, you know, been ixnayed or used in moderation, there's a whole lot of Payton flying over the top of the pile. And you can see that he would usually try to land on his right shoulder and roll, but there was one where he just got like pile driven
straight down.
And I was like, oh, I don't feel good about seeing that on a highlight reel because we're oohing and aahing, and that might, you know, Walter was struggling with CTE.
Yeah.
So much so, you know, that he, you know, I think even when he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, he spent a lot of time by himself. He didn't want to see people, and I've been through that. But if you took, point being, if you took that aspect of Walter Payton away and you took Walter Payton's tendency to encourage hits before he went down instead of avoiding them, he would have been healthier, but he would not have been Walter Payton.
That's right.
So I could have done things that were healthier, but then I'm not the guy who got to the dance. You know, those were the things that brought me there. So I wish I had, the two things I wish I'd done, I wish I had not dropped elbows on the concrete in non-televised matches and used it less on TV also, and I wish I'd brought up the hand, because some of the best, there was no correlation to me between guys who blocked or did not block chair shots and guys who got over big time.
Right.
Because the guys who were the biggest stars in the business did block the chairs. And no one thought any less of them.
There you go, boys and girls. Concrete does not know how to work.
Yep.
7 minutes and 30 seconds in, Dude and Austin are still wrestling here. There's a full body chin lock on, and that's when Vince McMahon walks to the ring. Okay. He's got Briscoe and Patterson with him. This is really, you know, this month, April of 1998, is sort of the unofficial birth of the Stooges.
Yeah.
And it's fun to think about because at the time I thought, man, those guys are old. And now I realize Hunter's actually older than Briscoe was there. And I don't think of him as old, which I guess means I'm getting old. What do you think of the job that Briscoe and Patterson did?
Are we going to throw Slaughter in there as one of the Stooges?
I mean, might as well.
He was the third Stooge.
Yeah.
But Patterson and Briscoe were phenomenal.
Yes.
I mean, look, you don't make it into a Foley children's book unless you are your gimmick got over with me.
Yes.
So in Tales from Ruskell Lane, there is, oh, he took a right at a Christmas shop called Scrooge's. Up ahead, a sign proclaimed Spook House of the Stooges. So Jill Thompson, who did my artwork on four of my children's books, she reads it, and what she comes up with is just ingenious, because in the Spook House, there are ghosts of Patterson and Briscoe wrestling in evening gowns, which is a testament to her imagination and her artwork. And then, best yet, and I know we, it's hard to put this in post, right? I don't know if we can put this in post. When the cars leave the Spook House, they're exiting through Gerald Briscoe's mouth, and she just nails it. Like, she's got the 1950s astronaut haircut, the kind of, you know, Jerry's teeth were a little bit, they had some space between them, and he had that big smile, that big goofy grin, and it's just an incredible way for a car to exit a funhouse.
Sure.
Al Snow, by the way, is selling it big time, you know, and the moral of the story, or from there, you know, I embrace Al, we go on the smaller rides, and all is good in Ruskell Lane. But this goes, by the way, do people like our tangents? Can we?
Yes.
They do like the tangents.
It's uniquely Foley.
Okay, all right, good, because we do go off on them.
Yeah.
Here, and I think they're fun. But in answer to your question, tremendous, and I loved working with those guys. That was a highlight of my time as commissioner, was getting to play off those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really loved it. I just thought, Pat and Briscoe, and to a lesser extent, because he wasn't as involved, Slaughter.
Yeah.
Slaughter was interesting because he had been the huge star.
Yes.
Only 10 years earlier. And so it wasn't like you didn't have to remind people that Pat Patterson won the first IC championship in a non-existent tournament in Rio de Janeiro.
I mean, he's 7 years here removed from main eventing WrestleMania against Hulk Hogan. Slaughter, I mean.
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
Crazy.
Yes. Yeah. Only 7 years earlier, and now he's one of the Stooges.
Yeah.
So I don't think he took to it. He didn't take to it as readily as the other two guys did.
Sure.
But I still loved playing off Sarge, but not as much as I did Briscoe.
Of course, Pat. As we see, the camera catches this. McMahon is looking at the bell ringer and smiling, and of course he's smiling back. Austin notices that McMahon is now at ringside, leans over the top rope to yell at him, and that's when you roll him up for a believable near fall. And McMahon leaps up during the two count, excited at the possibility of the pinfall. This is all written by Wade, of course. At 11 and a half minutes, McMahon walks over to Austin, who's laid out on the floor in the aisleway. He taunts him verbally. Austin begins backing McMahon towards the locker room, which gives Dude a chance to nail Austin from behind, and McMahon's gloating. So this is really the first time that McMahon has been involved in one of your matches.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, certainly he knows what he's doing as a businessman and as a writer and as a promoter and a booker or whatever you want to call it. But in terms of the guy actually being out here, a part of it, is this something you guys would have walked through before earlier in the day just to get him comfortable? Or does everybody trust, hey, he's been around it enough, he knows, he gets it?
I don't think we did much walking around. He was going to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was going to get it. And now as I'm listening to how Wade wrote about it, it is more than a wrestling match.
It's a story.
It's a passion play.
Yes.
Yeah, it is definitely a story. A very story-driven match.
Well, eventually, at 13 minutes and 40 seconds, you get that dreaded abdominal stretch. And I know people are laughing at that like you are, but that was the finish to Monday Night Raw when Vince called for the bell. So
yeah.
Now we've conditioned fans to think, oh, this could be
this
it.
Is the sharpshooter. This is dude's sharpshooter, yeah.
And McMahon starts signaling for the bell to be rung. And Austin quickly reverses the stretch which causes McMahon to frantically wave off the order. No, 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 not now, never mind, which is great. The bell doesn't ring, and then eventually Austin is going to suplex you onto the stairs. And then you're going to try to run from Austin. You're going to jump over the railing, and Austin's going to chase you, throw you back over the railing on the ringside area. And then back in the ring, you take over, and in 16 minutes, you start signaling for that sweet chin music.
Austin.
Austin blocks it, goes for the stunner, but you're going to clothesline the ref.
Ooh.
When Austin ducks. And now he starts pummeling you with punches, and you've applied your own mandible claw. And it's written here, McMahon could barely control his excitement at ringside. Austin, though, punched his way out of the claw. Is this the first time somebody... I mean, on pay-per-view, it feels like, well, if Mick gets the claw, that's it. This might be one of the first times on pay-per-view someone fought out of the claw.
I don't know. And I'm wondering why. Originally called the Love Handle.
Which is a great name.
Great name. We stopped using it when I was a babyface after that first month and went with the sweet shin music, with the double-arm DDT, setting it up. But, I mean, I need some offense. I don't have a lot of offense. No. None of my characters did. And this was a time-tested move. Now, once I started doing, like, independent shows as a troubleshooting guy, at ringside enforcer or the referee, the mandible claw became the five-second pop that would always be interrupted. There'd always be somebody pulling me outside. So I went, like, 10 years without actually winning, without the mandible claw doing what it was supposed to do.
I see.
But at this point in 98... Yeah, it was. I needed that. That was my heavy ammo.
So eventually, you're going to go for another mandible claw. Somewhere along the way, McMahon is trying to revive the referee. When you try to finally go for that third one, Austin's going to backdrop you over the top rope to the floor, and that leads Vince to pick up a chair. And Austin's going to try to wrestle the chair away. And then Austin hits you. You get the chair, and you charge him. He lifts his elbow, knocks the chair back into your own face, and then he's nailing you with the chair. McMahon is trying to help you up to your feet. Austin's going to swing a chair. When he's swinging at you, he's looking at McMahon. And, yeah, McMahon doesn't blink, twitch, or move for the rest of the event. Austin gives dude the stunner in the ring and covers him. The ref is still knocked out. Austin counts three on his own. The fans pop. The music starts to play. He grabs his belt, and he walks to the back holding it in the air. Meanwhile, paramedics are tending to McMahon, putting on his, quote-unquote, Long Island neck brace. But this is an interesting finish because there's no official word because the bellkeeper's in on it, and the referee's unconscious, and now Vince is being stretchered out. What do you remember when it's all said and done, Austin's music playing, and the crowd is with it? Do you feel a sense of accomplishment?
Like yeah. I was going to say relief and accomplishment. And Vince, this is one where I did hit him with the chair.
Yes.
Vince was like, he was really excited. It was for his first chair. And this sounds strange. I don't want people experimenting with steel chairs on their own. But as anyone can attest who's ever hit a baseball with a wooden bat, there are better places. There's a sweet spot.
Yes.
So as somebody who's taken some BP in major league batting cages, you know, without batting gloves, if you don't hit it on the sweet spot, it jars your hands. You know, it can really make them ache that next day if you're not used to it. But I hit Vince as perfectly as you could. The sweet spot where it actually hurts less than it otherwise might. So the perfect chair shot will hurt less than if you catch somebody to the side. Or I think we're going to talk...
is it dead center? Is that the sweet spot?
It's dead center. So I think we're going to talk about... was it the rematch? I can't remember. The one where I was dancing on stage with Vince, Mr. McMahon, and the dude, Lovetz, that I had 27 stitches from a Terry Funk chair shot where I was caught by the lip. And I posted a photo... last week on Facebook, where I saw a good friend of mine, dear friend, going all the way back to middle school, and we contrasted a photo of me showing her the script for the Loved One home movie we were going to make.
Okay.
And then juxtaposed that with a similar thing, but instead of showing her script, we're looking at a menu 39 years later. And I remember, I even wrote in it, yeah, I used to stay with her and her husband all the time, but that one day I called up and I was like, listen, I should probably get a hotel room. I just got 27 stitches and I don't want to get blood on your pillows, because that's the type of house guest I am.
Well, look at you being so considerate. Something that Wade points out here that I want to bring up is, you know, when we're putting Vince in this neck brace and stretching him out, this is happening just days after a real-life situation happened with Buff Bagwell on the other channel.
Ooh.
So this pay-per-view's on a Sunday. That was Thursday Thunder. Steiner comes off the top rope to bulldog Buff, and Buff's head slips out. Buff's head hits Steiner's back. It's a very real circumstance.
Yeah.
They just put a pause in the show for a bit while they try to tend to him. And now a few days later, we're doing a neck brace and a stretcher job. That was always going to be part of the story, but in hindsight, should it have changed or was it necessary for the story?
I wasn't even thinking along those lines. Yeah, it probably should have been tweaked a little bit. He could have been helped to the back by two guys, you know?
Yeah.
That one, we should have made a change there.
Wade would say, Austin is pretty much back to the level he was before his injury, and dude took some awesome bumps that fit into the context of the storyline of the match. The finish also fit well into the ongoing Austin McMahon soap opera without hurting Mick Foley, who apparently will be getting rematches against Austin 3¾ stars. Did you think, I mean, were you proud of this match,
yeah,
or was this just another one?
No, I was really proud of it because it was a definite hurdle. It was out of my comfort zone, new challenge. I remember there was a message my wife wanted me to call. Steve had called the house, so I called. I didn't get Steve, but I got Jeannie. And she told me that Steve was really happy with the match, with the rating that came in. And I remember going, Steve has so much respect for you. Which really meant a lot because he was clearly the top guy in the company. He was taking us to places none of us had ever been before. So it did stand out as being something that I was very proud of and very happy with.
You mentioned that it was well received. 306,000 buys for this show.
So that's really good for
In Your House. It's the all-time In Your House at that point.
Boom!
Because, by God, nobody came through more.
When it mattered less.
Mr. In Your House sitting right here
with us.
The
number one name in secondary PPVs.
I'm excited to talk about how you're feeling on the other side of this. You wrote in your book, as it turned out, all our fears were quickly relieved. Austin and I tore the house down.
Yeah.
Vince was simply hilarious in his role as the crooked boss who was looking for any opportunity to screw the rattlesnake out of the gold. His facial expressions, with the exception of the bobbing Adam's apple during times of fear, are the best in the business. At the end of the match, dude was down and out. As the concerned McMahon tried in vain to lift his 300 pounds off the ground, Austin wielded a chair, which was supposedly meant for dude, but strayed about 2 feet and caught the evil Vince square in the head. Vince went down to the delight of the fans, but the bell was rung immediately.
So this was Steve hitting.
Swinging the chair.
I think I must have swung the chair the next month.
I got you.
Okay.
Dude had won. Dude had won. In the words of Owen Hart, I did it. I'm a winner.
Woo!
Unfortunately, the belt can't change hands on a DQ. Right. So, still, though, I mean, listen, this is, it's not WrestleMania. That got 809,000 buys, but it is an all-time In Your House record. You got to feel good about that.
Because In Your Houses were usually 200 or less, right?
They were small.
In that vicinity.
I mean, if you got a 100 and something, nobody was upset.
Right.
But to go over 300 is a big doggone deal. And I'm curious, do you remember this as being one of your better payoffs at this point in WWE? I mean, the company's hotter than ever. I know you got bigger ones later.
Yeah, I don't think I heard the question. No, I don't remember it being very.
Really?
No, not particularly.
That's interesting to me because we hear that the business is hotter than ever and sold out crowd and set an In Your House record.
And I was still in my just happy to be here.
I got you.
But I know, I mean, I spoke up on certain things, but I didn't start complaining. You can ask JR about this because I did, I won't say complain, but I did protest.
State your case.
Stated my case several times after that. At least probably half a dozen times, but I don't think it was a particularly big payoff, and I don't think I was upset about it.
Were you excited to continue the story after this
yeah.
one?
Yeah. Now I was into it. Now I felt comfortable. I had confidence. And also I think the next match was playing more to my strengths with a gimmick, old false count anywhere match.
Next week we're going to, or next month rather, we're going to continue the story because we're going to talk about Over the Edge and the rematch here. But in the meantime, we've got some fun episodes. We'll be talking about Lockdown 2009 soon. We're going to defeat Sting to win the TNA title. You even wrote a book about it.
Yep.
We'll even talk about Owen Hart. And we'll even open up the show to our fans here and our listeners. We'll do an Ask Mick Anything. And then we'll talk about when Cactus Gets Extreme, some time where you spent some time in ECW. And, of course, we know next week you'll be in McAllen, Texas for the South Texas Comic Con. I think that is available now at southtexascomiccon.com. And we know this weekend you're here in Huntsville at the Von Braun Center. If you're within driving distance of Huntsville, come see Mick this weekend. HSVExpo.com is where you can pick up your tickets. HSVExpo.com. He's there today, tomorrow, and Sunday. And speaking of Sunday, next Sunday, A&E's Most Wanted Treasures.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I mean, you're really excited about this.
I really am.
You're proud of this.
I'm really proud of it. I think we have put together something really special. There was a lot of, I thought, great chemistry and camaraderie with me and Booker and Lita. And I think everyone's got strengths and weaknesses. I think my rapport with the other WWE superstars and with the collectors this show really played to my strengths.
I can't wait to watch it, and I can't wait for you to see all the shirts we've got over at FoleyIsPodShirts.com. Of course, we've got the now infamous Mr. In Your House shirt. Oh, we've proven one. That here
yeah.
again today. Set the doggone record. It's one thing to hear the show. It's another to watch it. Check us out on YouTube, Foley on YouTube.com. Love to have your interaction as well on social media, at FoleyIsPod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can catch Mick over on Instagram, at Real Mick Foley. And we love talking about our sponsors here. We love talking about the good old days. And if your business targets men 25 to 54 years old, brother, there's no better place to advertise than right here on Foley's Pod. You hear us do some of the same ads over and over and over. Why is that? Well, because it really works. And with our super targeted audience, there's very little waste. Go right now to advertisewithfoley.com. That's advertisewithfoley.com. To find out more about advertising here on Foley's Pod. And by the way, in the coming weeks, we're going to have a very special bonus watch-along. We teased a few weeks ago, Mick, that maybe we should watch that Texas Death Match between Hangman Adam Page and Jon Moxley from AEW. I think we should watch that, do some alternate commentary, get your opinions.
We could do that.
We'll do it over at adfreeshows.com. In the meantime, we'll be back next week. And man, am I pumped about next week. We're going to be talking about Lockdown 2009 right here on Foley's Pod.
Which will be the lowest rated episode yet.
Why?
I just don't think people care that much about it.
You wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why you know.
And I've got the sales figures.
You've done the research.
I've done the research.
All right, we'll change it. Next week, we're not talking about Lockdown in 2009. We're talking about Sting and TNA. Yeah, we're going to call it the Sting Show next week. Right here on Foley's Pod.